Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
I need a picture of this ASAP. I need a picture of that plushie.
Oh, it's the main character from Origami, the video game Origami.
I'm not familiar with this game.
It's a stealth.
Like a red ninja, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm here.
It's a red and black ninja, basically. It's super cool.
Yeah, that's something I've discovered as I've gotten back into toys. And that, like, you know, you can pre-order them, and they have, like, a you know, some kind of an estimate as for when it ships, but like suddenly that thing might just show the fuck up.
like there's like 10 of mine or so that were supposed to show up in fucking June.
Yeah.
And I think one or two of them have come in.
Yeah. Well, it's like all of mine. It's always like the estimate is like months out. Like I remember some were supposed to come out on my birthday and then it was like 2 months early. I was like, oh God.
Oh, yeah, a couple of mine have been like that, too. Matter of fact, one of them that I've been charged for was supposed to come out in Q3 of next year, and one that I already have was supposed to come out in, like, February of March of next year, and I've had
it. You have it already?
Yeah, I've had it for weeks now.
Nice.
Yeah, the estimates are just all over the place. Like, who knows? I don't know.
Yeah, it's fucking god-awful. And yeah, Joe, we're talking about this because I've already gone over the limit that I'm supposed to spend on money because a bunch of pre-orders of stuff have come in all at once.
Nice.
Yeah, just three model kits have already put me over $200.
Good lord.
How big are these? I know the one you were showing me last week is like, what, between 3 and 4 feet?
Yeah, that one alone cost $300, and sadly, yeah.
It's gorgeous, though. I mean...
Yeah, it's 3 foot long, 2 feet wide, and like a foot and a half to 2 foot tall. Yeah.
Wow.
It's
huge. Show me some pictures. I was like, holy shit.
That's the one that I can't afford because I missed it, and it's the one that got away. Wanted. Yeah, it's the one I've wanted since I was a kid, and they made one way back then in like 2001 that was super small, and I
don't talk about being a kid in 2001, please.
It was super small, and I knew I wasn't going to be able to put it together because it was so tiny. And I was just hoping they'd make a bigger one. And after 20 years, they finally made a bigger one, and I missed it because I wasn't into building Gunpla yet. I found out about it a handful of months ago, but I started doing Gunpla like 5 months after it came out. That was the first time it was ever reprinted, 20 years.
Wow.
So I'm like, motherfucker. Yeah, and now it's like $800 to buy it, because the only place you can get it is from eBay at this point, and, well, people are people, so they bought it, and now they're selling it for like 2-3 times the price. It's like, fuckers. I'm like, I just want that one. That one and the Tall Geese, those were the ones I wanted, and I have almost all the Tall Geese now. I'm only missing one. And I would have bought that, but all these pre-orders came in, so.
I think literally everyone in this chat, except for Jacob, I think, who just joined, and Jacob I may have this in common with as well, that I like collect something that they also collect. I don't collect Legos anymore, but I used to have a few cool sets, and I do collect, I have a bunch of Dwarven Forge mini train I've been collecting for many years, so I kind of got that going on with Tim, because I consider Legos mini train, changed my mind. I got Aki, I got models and plushies in common with Purnell board games, although I don't have a very big board game collection anymore, but I have a few.
I wouldn't be shocked if Jacob had Gunpla.
I wonder what Jacob collects. This kind of leads me right into that. And then Chris and I all got some dumb video game shit, same for Joe. We talked about limited editions.
I never got into Gunpla. I do have a few Gundam action figures.
Ooh, which ones? I have a bunch of those too. So,
oh god,
I'm keeping all of this, by the way. Just
go ahead and keep it.
Brooke mentioned all of us already.
Let's see. They're all.
Yeah, there we go.
They're all from back when, like, the Gundam figures were in toy stores and stuff like that. So, I've got Epion. Nice. I've got Death Scythe Hell Custom. Nice. Sandrock Custom. I think I have Wing Gundam.
I'm missing that one.
And I have like a couple
down and steal it.
I want to say I had like a couple of like they're away, but a couple of like the G Gundam figures.
Yes.
And
I have all of those Walmart. Battle damaged.
Yeah, I have a lot of
no damage.
I had like most of the principal cast of G Gundam models back. They suffered in one move and are kind of in rough shape, and I haven't readdressed them.
I have all of mine. They're in perfect condition, and I didn't even like that series.
I love that series. It's so stupid.
They could have one time at Walmart.
Oh my god! I'm trying to describe the last one.
I know. We're doing a good job of cutting them off.
I found a one from Mobile Suit Gundam. It was on like clearance because somebody had ripped like the card in half. Ooh. And it's that like I don't even know how the hell to describe it. It's like half of a Gundam suit, but on like tank treads.
The gun like, tank.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. It was on
I know that's side. What it is.
Okay. That's yeah, I don't know.
I just watched that entire series like a couple months ago again.
Ew.
It's the best one.
No, it really is not.
Yes, it is.
I hated it as a teenager. Who will survive? And it's like, yeah, because you're going to kill off a... No, you're going to kill off a random chode every single week. And then you're not going to have any like character development whatsoever with a cast of like 50 that we can't keep track of. No.
Yeah, most of the cast was not particularly useful, but the main cast, they all got decent character development by the end. It took a while for some of them, but...
But anyways, since you're asking what I collect Star Wars action figures of the 3 3/4 inch variety. And what?
Nothing.
Oh my god.
Anyway.
Excellent contribution to the conversation, Joseph.
You're welcome.
But mostly at this point I just collect like the little like astromech droid action figures because Hasbro really stopped making action figures of that size. Like all they do is the black series now.
Yeah, the premium ones.
Yeah, and so I'm really priced out of a lot of it. However, at the Disneyland theme parks and resorts and all that kind of shit, like they have like the droid factory, and they've started releasing like holiday droids. So there's like Christmas, Halloween, Pride Day, and
That's
I don't know. They also release like random ones throughout the year too. But so like that's what I collect now because.
How much do those Black Series figures cost that they priced you out?
Well, I mean,
somewhere between 15 to 20, like minimum.
Yeah, but they're also like base retail.
Yeah,
that's. But they're also like 5 inch tall figures, and I've already got like nearly like $399
for Leonardo back in the day.
Yeah, like. Yeah.
I'd love to collect the lightsabers, but they're way too expensive.
Yeah.
They're like $200 and shit.
If I stick with like the droid factory shit, it's like I'm spending like maximum like $300 a year on this, and my wife is very much approval. She's got her approval of that. But what I'm looking forward to this year is that Disney released an advent calendar for Droid Factory, and so like once December rolls around, I get to put together like 5 different droids. Plus, on Christmas Day, I get like a Gonk droid.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. like my kids are gonna go absolutely ape shit over my new droids.
You're I'm gonna have to go be like shit over the new droid.
I'm gonna be like, back off, children. These are my droids.
Yeah, I know. Well, no, no. Because
my kids. You're gonna have to say these are not the droids you're looking for.
Yo, but I'm all about advent calendars. I've just got myself in a marshmallow advent calendar. I'm not even fucking around. It's been a year, dude. I earned it.
My wife marshmallow has is in.
Like one marshmallow a day for 24 days or however many come on this calendar.
Okay, so like the can like food / candy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're
doing like the musician marshmallow.
Well, yeah, that's why I wasn't.
I haven't had an advent calendar in over a decade.
I haven't had one in a really long time. I'm bringing it back this year for some reason.
How do you know it's been a decade if you haven't had a calendar?
Ooh.
Because it's been more than a decade since I was in high school, and I haven't had one since, like, maybe middle school.
Okay, good enough.
My child predictably has a Pokemon card advent calendar that he's going to be opening.
Yeah.
And my wife has one of, like, exotic jams.
I actually know the one. It's from Maman, right?
Maybe.
Dude, I thought about getting that one before I saw the marshmallow one. I'm all up on that.
Dang.
Tell her to message me about how those jams are.
I will. Thank you. I'll tell her. We're going to be doing the jams.
we're doing advent calendars as well for everybody. I've got the droid one. Sam, the kids don't know about these yet, so hopefully they're not going to wake up and peek their head into while I'm talking.
Oh no, I'm going to fucking tell them.
Well, good. It'll be weird, but nice to see your face. So Sam's getting a Jurassic World one, and it has like these micro dinosaur, they're about the size of like the baby dinosaurs that would come with the action figures, but you can make like a little Jurassic Park for them, because like it comes with like the fences and like the gate and all that kind of stuff. And then my youngest kid Silas is getting a Bluey one based off the Australian cartoon show.
I hadn't heard of the show either, but I saw the calendar.
You should watch it. It's on Disney Plus. It's amazing.
Bluey.
Like just a capital E?
No, E-Y. Y.
Okay. Yeah.
Like the color and then Y at the end.
Those sound awesome. One of them sounds kind of like Mini Train, so I'm into it.
the Bluey one has like special Christmas like action figure ones, so it's just like if you don't buy this advent calendar, I don't know that these will ever be available ever again. So yeah. And then Jess, I don't know what she's gonna do yet. Like she talked about like there's like a T one. So
I've never done an advent calendar.
Me neither.
I want to make one year. I kind of have some dumb ideas, but
okay. This Bluey thing's adorable.
Yeah. Oh, it's an amazing.
I'm interested in the marshmallow one. I am very interested. Are they like plain marshmallows, or are they like chocolate covered, or
they're like different flavors? Each day is a different flavor of marshmallow.
Every day, it's just a plain fucking marshmallow, Joe.
Be fucking hilarious.
I could see someone selling that and be like, get a marshmallow a day.
They get slowly bigger by like a millimeter every day.
You do have those ones there where it's like you get a piece of chocolate. Yeah. So I mean, like,
right.
Yeah, I get you.
You never know.
That makes sense.
Yeah, those are the ones I used to get, were the ones that had just a piece of chocolate. And I think they were all Hershey Kiss ones, was what I got.
My brother and I used to get into fist fights over the advent calendar that we had at our house. It's this like cloth one with a picture of like Santa and Mrs. Claus just like hanging out like the night before Christmas and stuff like that, and there's this like little cloth mouse that you move around numbers 1 through 24, and my brother and I used to get into fist fights over who got to move it, until my mom was like sick and tired of us like punching the shit out of each other. And so she made it, because my birthday falls on an odd day. I got to move it on odd days, and my brother got to move it on even days. Up until he lost interest. And then I demanded to keep moving it myself. Then my dad got into it,
He only thirsted for the battle.
Yeah, well, and then my dad was like, oh, you know, all bets are off. So he would be downstairs at 12:01 and he'd move it.
Oh, come on.
What a dick.
Oh yeah. So I would on the days where I was supposed to move it, I would make sure I was downstairs at 11:59. And obviously I don't live with my folks anymore, but there's been a couple of times where during December, I'll just drive over to my folks' house and be there at 11:59 at night and just walk in, move the mouse, and leave.
That makes me so happy. Oh man.
You're such an asshole.
I love this story. That is amazing. The story ended. The story took us to a place I did not know we were going, ended in a really awesome place. And I love that twist where the two brothers are just so pumped over this advent calendar, and the mom's probably yes, oh, I just really wanted them to be super enthusiastic about the silly advent calendar, and then you guys resort to violence because you guys get to
this explains so much about Jacob.
It must be so hard for story. That was awesome. I loved that.
All right, reviews, go.
Okay.
No, that was a good bow on it.
Should we?
I think so.
Yes.
Brooke, you're first.
Do it. All right.
All right, first game to talk about tonight is Milk Inside a Bag of Milk Inside a Bag of Milk and Milk Outside a Bag of Milk Outside a Bag of Milk.
What the fuck?
Developed by Nikita Kuryov, I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm just bad
that's
at these.
That's the bit that's hard to say.
Krukov. I don't know these letters together. Published by Forever Entertainment, released November 11th on the Switch for $7.99. A short story about what sort of challenges everyday little things can be. Help the girl buy milk, be the first to not disappoint her. The game is a small visual novel showing either funny abstraction or wordplay or painful psychological episodes. The claim that history is based on real events will be too specific, so it is easier to pretend that it is just a set of abstractions and wordplay. Brooke, what is going on in Milk?
Before Brooke starts, I just want to say two things. First thing, I want to buy this game just based on the title alone.
It's really good.
And fair. Second, you know, games where you have to not disappoint women, that is, well, I've already lost, so.
That is the power fantasy you're looking for.
Oh, I want to reply to that second one so bad, but it's spoiler town if I say what I want to say. So what I am going to say is I'm into that second point. See me after class. We're going to DM about this. And I might get you this game because it's 99 cents on Steam. I might actually buy this for you, so you'll talk to me about it. But yeah, Joe asked me what's going on in this game. I don't fucking know. I played the hell out of it. It's hard to say, but what I will say is this is an awesome game. This is a buy it from me. Highly, highly recommend this game. It's good. I'll talk a little. This game's really more. Hard to describe. It's mesmerizing. It's pretty scary. It's surreal. We're gonna let Tim finish it out. I'm glad you like that, but I did write notes just in case you guys made me say more. But officially, that's the first of my notes. I say this is an awesome game. This is buy it from me. Highly recommend. New paragraph. This game's hard
God
to describe.
Damn it, Joe made me talk more.
Oh God, Joe, come on, man. But yeah, this is like a mesmerizing game. Like, it's pretty scary and surreal. It's mostly a visual novel, but it's really pushing at the edges of that genre, no doubt. This game's got it's so hard to describe.
Question: is this a game or an experience?
I would say it counts as a game. I think it has a lot more options than your average visual novel has, even taking in the length of many of the playthroughs of this game. I'm going to name some games that this game reminds me of when it comes to graphics and sound design and just general operation of the game and UI and vibe. Papers, Please, Hotline Miami, Retired Men's Nude Beach Volleyball League, an old NFL favorite, very near and dear to our hearts.
Yes.
Content-wise, but not in a depressing way, Doki Doki Literature Club, Toe Jam and Earl, Undertale. A lot of these games are working with a little and give us a surreal experience. A lot of these games have insane sound design that does a lot with a little and really, really, really takes you there. I would say the sound design reminds me the most of Papers, Please and Hotline Miami. I adore Papers, Please, and I think it has an incredible vocal sound design thing going on. Also a Russian game. Is this game from Russia originally?
Based on the name, I'm guessing yes.
That's what I started thinking as you said that, but I should have looked into Ryukov, that.
I think it
but
is.
But yeah, dude, this
write it theme. Down. I'll be able to maybe tell
A-R-Y-U-K-O-V.
All right. But the theme
I said write it down for a reason.
No.
All right, guys. Shit. So the theme and vibe of this game couldn't be different than the games I compare it to, like as far as graphics and sound design. Maybe a little bit Papers, Please. That game actually gets kind of scary. We have amazing art direction in this game and some real groundbreaking shit. Basically, like, if I could pick three games I reviewed for the show to be in the top three games I think games people should play, I would name this game and two other games. And if somebody asked me what three games someone could play to understand me better or understand somebody who has a brain like mine, even outside of just the show, this would be in my top three for that as well. I don't want to say a lot about this game because it's a really cool surprise and it's not that long no matter where you go in your playthrough. I also don't want to say in any way that I think that this game is going to only be interesting to people who are interested in mental illness or who want like a sad story about that. This isn't that type of game at all. The way that it's described and pitched, I'm worried people might think that. I think anyone will find this game interesting. But I will say, if you have been diagnosed with OCD or ADHD, identifies on the spectrum, or anything that, like, how do I say this? I definitely count in this category. Anything that makes it hard to explain to others who don't have whatever you have going on in your brain, what's going on in your brain when they're expecting you to do something else, and they're not really understanding the disconnect there. This could be the coolest fucking game you've played this year, if you fall in that category, or if you think about that a lot. This is a really fun game. I think it's pretty important too. But yeah, not in a way that drags you down or is preachy at all. It's a very surreal experience, and it's not going to tell you what to think. It's just going to kind of let you in and walk you through it. And your take on this game may be completely different than what I'm saying here, but that's really what I took away from it and what makes it such a masterpiece that you don't even have to see it that way, and I would still consider it a really fine piece of work. This game opens up, it has a screen that reads, "Hey, this game contains flashing lights and touches on some dark stuff, take care." And then it just lets you in. So yeah, I would call this a buy it. Rewind to the past. I didn't realize this was two games in one, and I mostly played the first game. And before I realized that, I went crying to Joe, like I always do. I was like, "Joe, this game is almost $8 on Switch, and it's 99 cent on the Steam store. Like, I think it's well worth between like $8 and $20. I love this game. I'm going to get on the show. I'm going to recommend it. But like, how does this work? You know, I've only been reviewing games for a year. I was like, can I mention that it's 99 cent on Steam? And then as I saw Joe typing back, he saw me edit my message and I'm like, wait, I'm a fucking idiot. I just booted up the game again. It's two games. So this is not only milk inside a bag of milk inside a bag of milk inside a bag of milk inside a bag. This is also the game milk outside of a bag of milk. And I think it repeats from there, but I'm actually not super familiar with the second game's title. Straight up.
Yeah, it's basically just the same, but outside this time.
This has got like a really surreal art style. So when I loaded up the title screen, I didn't realize it's one of those cool toggle screens where sometimes you get like a re-release of a game on Switch, like we have with the Amnesia later crowd and the Amnesia base game that we reviewed. You open up to a toggle screen, you can kind of go left or right and select the game that you want to play. Once I sent that message to Joe and I started playing the sequel game, I understood why they're charging $8 for it, because the budget for the second game is just way, way, way higher than the first game. Not that the first game needs a higher budget, but the second game just has a lot of animation, a lot of like more expensive art. And it's not even just a visual novel. I haven't finished it yet, but I have transitioned from visual novel to point and click adventure game. But once again, this is kind of like, it's so cool. I'm actually really pumped to play more of the second one. But I played the first one through a few times. And yeah, I just think this is a dope game. I want to just go on record here. I may not be right, but I think this could be a contender for the most unique game SNL has ever seen. And if a couple of you guys play that, maybe you can tell me if this even ranks as high as I think it does. But I think it's really offering something special, but not, you know, overwhelmingly special in a sad way, like a lot of the special games that we've seen in the past few years.
I mean, if we're going to get down to the uniques, the store page has two of them. We got each playthrough is unique.
That works in that context.
Yeah. And then
you can
unique
say that.
Graphic style.
I don't know, because I was looking up Nita Packett to see if I could find similar names, but didn't. So
they also,
I think this is an established style.
I don't understand what this means, but yeah. The soundtrack is labeled as oppressive and vicious.
I can see that. I think it's also vibey and delicious. So
it's just Mariah Carey's All I Need.
Oh my god. Okay, that was really timely. That was really good. Although she popped out 7 days ago out of the grave and started singing that again. But thanks for saving that one for us. But yeah, that's the end of my review. Buy this game. Or if you want to cry about it, I'll buy it for you. The dollar version. But both are really, really worth it.
Cool. And as you mentioned, it is a little cheaper on Steam, so that's always an option. But if you want that I can't even say if you want that handheld portability, because fucking Steam Deck.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the Steam Deck's more expensive than Switch, so there you go.
There you go.
Anyway. I've got it. I'll play it at some point.
Brooke, you going to hang around for a little bit more, or are you going to head out?
I'm going to hang around a little bit, but I'm going to mute, and I'm going to, like, pick up a burger. So I'll be around, but kind of.
Burgers. I'm just going to hold it.
What kind of burger?
It's going to be McDonald's, which is only personal. 350 feet from my house. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave on the wireless headphones and see if I can actually hear you guys from McDonald's. And I'll let you know.
If you can, you have to order on the show.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
We had Purnell travel to Best Buy during the show. Yes.
To pick up Dragon Quest Builders because it was on sale.
Okay, I fucking love Dragon Quest Builders, but two, what episode is this? I will listen to this episode.
It was the holiday episode like a few years ago.
Okay, well, I'm gonna dig find it up this. Somewhere.
I don't remember whether it was, I think it was, I don't remember whether it was one or Dragon Quest Builders one or two.
That's sick as hell.
It was probably two.
It was two, yeah.
Yeah. So figure out the year Dragon Quest Builders 2 came out. It's either that year or the year after.
I want to say 2018.
Is Purnell here? Purnell, have you talked yet?
No.
He's been eating a burger.
Wow, must be nice.
Wow.
No, I'm not eating a burger.
Okay. What are you? That's exactly what you would say if you weren't eating a burger.
Now I really want Burger King. God.
I was eating Mapo Tofu.
Oh, nice.
This stuff. Love it. Spicy or numbing.
So good.
Anyway, next game, Tanuki Sunset, developed by Rewind Games, published by Digirati, released November 2nd on PlayStation, November 4th on Xbox for $14.99. Tanuki Sunset is a fun arcade-style longboarding game starring a radical, thrill-seeking raccoon. Get into a flow state and master the art of drifting as you speed downhill. Become the first raccoon to complete Sunset Island's legendary longboard trail. Tim, what is going on in Tanuki Sunset?
I can't believe this game's been on Steam for almost 2 years and they haven't put the damn soundtrack up there, because that was my favorite part of the game. That's bullshit right there. Yeah, so anyway, so this is a game where you are a raccoon who's named Tanuki. You're not a Tanuki named raccoon. Get it right. Who, yeah, is out there to have some fun, do some longboarding on this beautiful, you know, neon sun-drenched tropical island, I guess I'll say. This takes the form of you with your raccoon buddy. You are on your longboard and you are skating down these narrow, twisty, turny roads through, a few different environments. But yeah, it's very narrow. There's this like floating in the sky. I don't know who did the the industrial design here of these roads, but seems not safe. There's no guardrails, so you can fall off. More on that later. You're on your longboard. You are cruising down these roads. You can there are sharp corners where you will need to drift, which can be done just by pushing a face button with a direction, or you can use the trigger buttons to do your drifting. There's like a revert maneuver where you'll do a little spin. There is a little hop where you'll hop up off your skateboard. The roads are dotted with little pickups, little gems. They have a name, I'm sure.
And, you know, you're picking those up. Those are your currency in the game. You'll use the revert. There'll be like little clusters of four blue ones. And if you use the revert, you'll do a little spin and you'll be able to get all four of them at once. And your raccoon does a little dance, which kind of locks you into an animation for a few seconds. More on that later. And some will be like floating up in the air, or there'll be like hazards that you can just push the jump button to hop over a hazard or pick up a floating thing that's inside of a ring, which will give you a little speed boost if you push forward. Like, all these roads are endlessly tilting downhill to, I guess, make it make sense why your skateboarder is just going on forever. They're impossibly going downhill everywhere, every way, both ways.
Downhill, so if you, both yeah, ways.
Downhill both ways. So if you press down, you will skate faster. If you pull back, you will skate a little bit slower, which might be important for certain turns. Levels are broken down into various stages and then checkpoints within the stages. There's like a little meter on the right side that will relay to you your progress and like how close you are to the next checkpoint and how much road there is between you and the finish. The stages are randomly generated. Even like in mid run, like if you fall off and it sets you back to the checkpoint, like the stage will reconfigure, which I'm not sure how good an idea that is for, it's just not the type of game that it is, I guess I should say.
Do you think that might be like an analogy of brain damage or something?
Probably. It's about being able to read the course ahead of you and react appropriately much more than it is about just memorization of a track for speed. In between levels, you can go back to the skate shop with your currency, and your little raccoon guy will walk around on his hind legs, little trashy panda that he is, where you can customize your board with different boards, different wheels, different trucks. You can customize your raccoon with different shirts and accessories and hats and glasses and stuff like that. And that all looks very, you know, good on your dude. The game just has like a good style and vibe to it all around. You know, even though you are a ridiculous raccoon skateboarding downhill on these impossible narrow sky highways, it just gives me vibes of like OutRun or Rad Racer, stuff like that. Those two things, harkening back to those days.
Days of yonder.
Well, you know, like checkpoint-based racing games. Though this is, you know, an obstacle course skating deal. My issue, I had a lot of trouble like getting a handle on the drift mechanic. It wasn't until like partway through the second like set of stages that I felt like I had a good handle on it. And even then, it still like would throw me for a loop sometime. And I'm not sure whether it's the mechanic itself or where the camera positions itself or if the way it might react differently when you're going different speeds. But right off the biscuit, I was flying off that road left and right, all willy-nilly. And it was just like, oof, oof, oof. And I got better at it as I played more of the game. I got a better feel for it. But it's still, I don't know, something about it just didn't feel... never felt like great to me.
Do you mind if I chime in on this part?
Go on.
Because I also played it a little bit.
Yeah.
The game offers you two different ways of drifting. You can either hold A and move with the, just use like the left joystick to decide like how you're going to drift. And the game introduces the mechanic that way. And I will say that way is absolute ass. Like, yeah. you're just going to go all over the damn track, and I just constantly found myself flying off. Or the other way you could do it is use the left and right triggers, left, you know, to drift left, right to, you know, obviously drift right. And that took a few tries, but honestly, I found, like, the trigger way to, like, I found that to be hell of a lot more precise than the other
one. I did not like the triggers at all. I abandoned those very early on.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Those sounds like two bad methods.
Well, no, I don't think they're bad. I think the means of controlling it is fine. It's just the way that the board reacts. Something isn't right. Sometimes I think it was that the camera is like facing like you're drifting sideways and the camera's facing the raccoon as it's like sideways, but when you snap back, like, I think the board keeps going in the direction of the board and not the direction of the camera. So if you've like overturned at all, which is possible because of just the position the camera takes, you end up just being too close to the side and like zipping off. It also helps to slow down. I did find that out too, with some of those corners. That was definitely a me problem. But yeah. But sometimes we'll sneak up. See, and the other thing I found about this game is like the levels are very long, I think, for the type of arcadey thing that it's going for. Like, it was taking me upwards of like 7, and this doesn't include, you know, falling off or crashing into things, like 7-8 minutes to complete a level, which is a long time to like try to not blink and keep your eyes on the road for obstacles or turns that are coming up and make sure you don't fly off. And then like if you fly off, you got to go back to the previous checkpoint. And that can be really brutal, especially on some of the longer stretches. Like the very last part of the third level is a very long stretch. And like that is a long level to begin with. And your little blue marker is moving up so slowly on that meter. It takes so long. And it's just it. That is a bad feeling. Yeah, I'm not a for fan what of should
long
be
races when
no
like when games make me do more than 3 laps and it's like 9 minutes long, I'm ready to check out.
That's too much. It's like 5 minutes is like I feel like my max race time, or however long it takes to do like what Rainbow Road and whatever Mario Kart where it's like 2 minutes for a lap. Like, and that's long. It's just like, no, I don't want to be. You need more of a break, I feel like, as a player. And in this, where it's like, you know, in Mario Kart, or in those races, like, if you fail, like, if you kind of hit the wall, or if you fall off the track, it might slow you down, or the little man in the cloud might pick you up and put you back on the track. Here, you go right back. You go way back. And that's rough when it requires a definite amount of precision with the drifting, which, your mileage may vary depending on the control scheme you use, but also it's like, you know, there's obstacles in the road. There's cars, there's piles of garbage, there's trip hazards and shit. And you know, if you nick those, if you're a little bit too close to them, you just brush up against them on the side, like boom, like you don't like bounce off them or slow down. Some things will slow you down, but like the cars, like you touch them, like you're done. That's it. Back to the finish line, starting line. You don't go to the finish line, you go back, not forward. And like I mentioned, that revert animation, when you succeed with that and your guy does a little dance, like it locks you into moving forward for, you know, a second or two, and that can be the difference between you crashing or not. So like sometimes like though that little you know, spinny thing would come up and I'd just be like, no, I can't do it, because if I try to hit it, I'm gonna fly off the map or crash into something. And also frustrating. But those are things that took, I think that like what the game is doing is very cool. It's a cool idea, but those things definitely took me out of it and hurt my enjoyment. I would have liked shorter levels. Maybe clearly they weren't going for constructed levels. I think that would have helped, shorter constructed levels that you can memorize and like really master. But trying to do like the Zen, like super long level and just like reacting thing, just didn't work. Cause I would like, I would get into it and I would zone out and then I'd like miss a cue and then I would fuck up and then I'd have to go back and I'm like, ah, that sucks. But yeah, for me, I think the thing I'm going to remember about this game most is the soundtrack. That's the MVP for me. It plays like a random playlist of these songs that just cut a really nice, you know, Outrun style, Rad Racer style, 80s driving vibe. And between songs, like you'll hear a cassette coming out of a cassette player and chunking back into it, which is cool. But yeah, I'm going to try to seek that out somehow. Soundtrack gets a buy it, even though I can't seem to find a place where one could partake in that.
Jacob, what are your thoughts?
I mean, Tim's pretty much covered everything that I had to say about it. like the lack of like save points during the race was, I found to be incredibly frustrating.
Mm-hmm. They're very spread out.
Yeah, especially like with like the drift mechanic. And me not like until I switched over to like the triggers, and then I was generally okay, but still it is real painful for some of those rides where it's just like you were almost at a checkpoint and then boop, you're back to the previous mm-hmm. one. And yeah, it's just it can be frustrating, but at the very least I feel like this is a try it at the very least, but
yep.
I'd recommend it as a buy it too. I liked it.
Yeah. It would be a try it for me officially.
Well, I am looking up. It seems like the composer is a game called Nonato Music or Nonato Music.
Okay.
I don't know. That's all I'm finding.
I don't know why it's no not on Steam. Come on now.
I'm glad I came back in time to freak out to that. That was really cool.
I'm looking at Nonato Music. I think that Nonato Music is a person.
Whoa, you lucked out with that last name then. He really kind of answered his calling.
I know, right?
Anyway.
Well, the guy has a Patreon.
Tim, that is it for you. Yeah. Were you going to hang around or are you heading
out? No, I'm going to go night-night. It's been a few days with sleeping and shit like that. My kid was throwing up and very sick Saturday and less sick but miserable on Sunday. And yeah, Saturday... It was a mess. I got so little sleep. Sunday, we also woke up relatively early. And yeah, I've just been trying to get caught up for days and I'm getting there, but it was rough. It was a rough weekend. It was like back to the early dad days of just like getting no sleep at all and just somehow making it work and hanging out with my child all the time. But also having to be very quiet because he didn't want me to initially. Okay. About this game. Initially I thought this game was what made him throw up the first time. Obviously as he threw up more times after that, I'm like, okay, no, not that. But I was Saturday morning, I was playing and he was watching me while trying to eat applesauce. And then he was like, Dad, I think I'm going to throw up. And I'm like, okay, let me just take it. And then there was just throwing up applesauce
everywhere.
I was like, okay, well, it was maybe it was the he got a little motion sick watching me try to take these turns and whatnot, but no, then he vomited more, so it wasn't Tanuki Sunrise's fault, but
Tequila Sunrise's.
It was I don't know what he threw up a few times and then finally got a little bit more sleep, and then I was able to start eating some more crackers and get a few things into his body and have it stay down there. But
that's a good thing.
Yeah. We were up at 2 a.m. on Saturday, got a little bit of sleep, woke up again, got a little bit more sleep, woke up. He like, it was just like, little nap. Okay. We're up, little nap in the afternoon, tried to put him to bed. Like he doesn't stay in bed. We're up until like 12:30. Oh, it was brutal. All right. But anyways, yeah, I'm going to shut up and go to bed. Good night, guys.
Take care.
Good night, my burger. Night. I'm out of here too. Unfortunately, before I even got out of the apartment, the headset cut off. So, next time I have something like this, I'm going to just get on the phone and we'll do it the old fashioned way, just like for now at Best Buy.
Nice. Well, I got to find out which episode that is.
Cool. Do it.
I'm going to maybe we can just search like the YouTube channel for Best Buy. Maybe it's like in the comments or something somewhere.
It would have been in the description. Yeah.
Probably, but I like if I open the video and it starts, I'll get that "Hey kids" every time, and it'll just be repeated. Hey kids, hey, kids,
you know how to mute sites on Google Chrome?
Yes.
You could do that.
Good.
How about who has the heart?
I mute Joe all the time.
I'm not listening to him. Anyway, Brooke.
Good night to y'all. We forgot to talk about the calendar. We need to next week. I'll be here. I'll be ready to talk about. Yeah, I got some plans.
The SML calendar.
I forgot about that until just now.
Oh my God. That'll probably never happen. But
no, man. I'm
366 photos of Jacob's B-hole.
each more shocking than the last. All right, on that note, I'm out of here. I'm going to eat my burger. This is a wonderful segue from me into my dinner. Good night, you guys. It was fun.
Bye, I'll see
you
next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, my God. All right.
Well, I think I'm off. I'll see y'all later.
All right.
Suspicious timing of your leaving.
Yeah, pretty much.
So you were just here to talk to Brooke.
Yeah. Hey, I'll talk to you fuckers on Thursday. That don't matter.
You make it sound like that's something we want.
Brooke's hot, the end.
Hey. Next game to talk about is The Legend of Tiandeng. Developed by Creative Games Computer Graphics Corporation, published by Neon Doctrine, released November 1st on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, and PC for $19.99. Legend of Tiandeng is a side-scrolling action game about the legendary Taiwanese folk hero. Explore the dazzling streets of colonial Japanese Taiwan in the early 20th century. Purnell and Jacob, the both of you, check this one out. Who wants to start?
Purnell, please.
Start.
Should I flip a coin?
Yeah, you should flip a coin, because I believe I said it first, but Jacob might lie and say he did.
All right, I'm going to flip it. Heads is going to Jacob, tails is going to Purnell.
All right.
Heads, Jacob, go first.
Get the chatty, boy.
By the way, this game is really, really good. We're not debating over who's going to shit on it first.
That is a fact. Unless Jacob hated it, in which case he's going to shit on it. But yeah, that'll be him by himself doing that part.
I mean, I figure I didn't get to play it as much as Purnell because I was told that this is going to be Purnell's review. That's why I was saying he should go.
Oh.
Just start.
Well, you still lost the coin toss. So.
Anyway, the Legend of Tiandeng is a 2D side-scrolling action game. Starts you off in colonial Japan, Taiwan, Japan, and you get confronted by a big fat guy on a cart who's a dickhead. And then the hero comes and you become the hero and you got to take him down. And that's where the story starts.
Wait, are you actually doing the thing? Because Jacob really is like, I don't know what to say about this game. Like, okay.
I don't know. Didn't say something. No one was saying anything.
Apparently, I have no choice. Jacob's like, I don't know this game exists. So, this game Okay, here we go. So, this game is essentially a, like Joe says, a 2D platformer that is reminiscent of, I would say, Guacamelee, actually. Yeah. Because the way it works is your character is a Robin Hood type entity who is based off of an actual folklore character. And for those who aren't familiar with the concept of this character, a good way to relate them is to say that he's similar to what would be Robin Hood, basically.
Should we call it a guac-like?
No, because this is essentially just as an action platformer.
A guacamelee-like.
No, don't fucking do that. It's not. That is, we're not doing another something like. It is just an action platformer that is similar to Guacamelee and its combat mechanics to traverse environments.
The Guacavania, Chris.
Oh, God, you guys are terrible, horrible human beings.
Guacametroid.
You know, yeah, that's what it is. It's a Guacametro with a little bit of Kid Icarus in it. So it's Guaca Icarusroid. There you go. Yeah, everything's awful. So,
Guacidicarus.
Guacidicarus. So, the idea behind this game is that your general combat styling, well, there's two types of areas this game takes place in. There is the actual prefecture where you actually interact with, for narrative's sake, like you talk to different characters and you pick up on narrative beats. And the way this game does large, like major narrative parts is pretty nice because it's done in a comic book style. Even the segues in between the story beats, like every once in a while it'll have a narrator talking on the radio, like those old radio dramas, and they'll be like, they talk in Taiwanese, and like basically like, what'll happen next time on to Tiandeng? We'll find out when we go to the next exciting chapter, and they'll say the name of the chapter and they move into it, which I actually really like. But like I said, in those story segments, you're kind of just running around the prefecture, helping out citizens with like little side quests and things of that nature. And also, you'll be exploring the environment for secret items, each of which can provide you with a very small buff to your overall stats. And I'm not even sure if this, like, I'm not even sure how the game decides what to give you and when, because it seems like it might even be a bit random. But nonetheless, it's just fun to kind of get new stuff. I'm like, hey, now I can do X more damage with this type of weapon, or what that, or I can, like, maybe, I don't know, like one more use out of a special sub-weapon. What do I mean by sub-weapons? Well, that needs me to talk about the other part of the game, which is the occasional scenario where you end up in a stage that is intrinsic to the plot, which will result in you going through essentially what I would call like a linear, a 2D dungeon. Because while it is not particularly a maze per se, there are some offbeat hidden pathways that lead to items and some alternate routes that you might need to diverge to maybe hit a switch, open a door, or whatever.
Hidden treasure chests abound.
Oh, yeah. And there's a lot of them. But the meat and potatoes of this game, and what I think is the thing, the game's shining grace, is this freaking sweet combat, which is a thing that you might have come across it occasionally on the outer in the main street areas, but you'll definitely come across it while you're engaging in actual dungeon or area exploration. So, combat in this game involves you fighting a number of different people, whether it be like police officers or, I don't know, like, it just, I don't know, giant crazy characters, angry people. It's just, it's an interesting array of characters in this game that you fight. And they sometimes even come with their own variety of weapons. Unlike a lot of other games where it's just flavored learning attack patterns, in this game it matters because of one of the particular moves that Tiang Ding can do. So off the bat, you can do normal physical attacks by mashing the X button. And you have a light-bladed dagger object as your main weapon, which can be upgraded as you progress through the game and spend money. However, sometimes while fighting an enemy, you might see the Y button pop up over the character's head. And when that happens, the game is giving you the opportunity to basically wrap the character up in like a red sash that is like your main staple object. And it pretty much lets you like kind of toss them in a specific direction. But when they come out of the sash, you now have the weapon the enemy was previously wielding. And that ends up leading to some pretty cool, diverse combat situations where you might find yourself being like, okay, I'm fighting these guys. I'm a little bit outnumbered, but I can get a little bit more damage if I get the guy that's hit me with the gun and steal it from him. So now I'm shooting all the enemies. Oh, I'm out of bullets, but that's okay because now that guy's running up to me with a Molotov cocktail and an axe. I'm going to steal both of them and use them one at a time, basically. And I do like that that's how this is working out because when you're in the thick of it and enemies are coming at you from all sides, you will find yourself strategizing on who is the biggest threat, who provides you with the best weapon to, you know, subdue the other enemies, and so forth. Basically, whatever weapon you like the most, too, sometimes. Like, yeah, I like the bow stab. It gives me a lot of reach, so I'm going to make that my primary.
I like the big axe. The big dudes that come at you, I love knocking them a few times, whipping them, taking their axe, and then just beating the shit out of everyone.
I like the axe, too, for the sake of power, but it's a slow wield, so I'm always like, you know, I can stand control, though. That is true. That is true.
You start swinging that, people go flying. Something else I like about the whole grabbing thing is if you're near traps, you can grapple them and throw them into the traps and kill them.
Yes, which ends up being a lot of fun. And another way you can knock enemies into traps, which I actually found to be especially fun, is over the course of the game, you will also discover new martial arts techniques. You might think that a lot of times it might just be simply for the sake of action or just new ways to beat people up. But like I mentioned before, this does give you, you know, map traversal abilities in that sense too. Maybe your soaring kick will have to give you that extra leap off your second double jump to reach a platform you couldn't reach. And the flying kick, while not too far, does propel you forward. So there will be times where you go jump, rising or soaring kick, flying kick to get to an out of reach platform. But then there's other things I like, such as like the 1-inch punch and also sometimes the flying kick, which you can use to knock people into the spikes like Joe was mentioning as well. Knock them into poison pits, knock them into spikes, knock them into whatever thing is meant to kill you, but screw that, ain't got time for that. You'll even learn a few defensive abilities as well that will make combat more fun in a defensive sense as well. But all in all, though, you learn enough moves and the combat is so fluid and smooth as you play that I don't feel combat ever gets boring to me. at all. And they do throw some jerkbag enemies in there too every once in a while, ones that have unblockable attacks, which you, or rather, let me rephrase that, because you can't block per se, undodgeable attacks, because you do have an ability to like kind of do a dodge roll into enemies or through them. But they did come up with a way to say certain attacks you can't even dodge roll through them. If you see it winding up, get the heck out of dodge. And unfortunately for me, sometimes I just make dumb mistakes and I get caught up in that nonsense anyway. This game was one that I am okay with admitting I did not want at first, because I was like, I don't have time for this. I don't want to do it. But from the moment I started playing it, I wanted to keep playing it. It was one of those games where I was like, you know, I'm good for this. This is a game that I'm sad I slept on before, because I had heard of this before too. But this is slick.
I think a lot of people are getting to see the artwork and the cover to it and immediately think that it might be like a visual novel or a JRPG. And the fact that it's just a really, really smooth 2D brawler catches people off guard.
That's right. It is so freaking slick.
And Jacob, what are your thoughts on it?
So I only got to play a little bit of this last night. I thought it, like, I mean, first off, the art style is what really sells it for me. I just thought it was absolutely beautiful from start, you know, like the whole time I got to play it. Very similar to in terms of like Final Vendetta, where it was just like I ended up spending more time staring at the world that I was running around in than doing the combat and stuff like that. However, they're both obviously two very different games, so similarities pretty much end there. The combat I thought was pretty fluid, and I did appreciate how, like, you know, if you're playing it on easy, like the game really understands you're there mainly for the story and like, yay, people, you know, without going too difficult. However, I found a lot of like the traps and stuff like that spread throughout levels, like those I found to be annoying, because half the time they didn't look like traps. It looked like a table, and it's like, oh no, this is a table that has spikes on it. What? Why? Like, who the hell keeps this around in their house?
Doesn't keep it around their house is the real question.
I mean, we don't have any spiked tables in my house.
Get your ass to IKEA.
I don't think IKEA sells spiked tables.
Maybe not a terrible IKEA.
You don't have them because they were stolen, because they didn't have spikes on them.
Makes sense. Anyway, but it's just like I found that kind of frustrating, and like as I'm getting older and my eyes don't work, you know, nearly as well, I had problems figuring out like what stuff, like, you know, was a trap versus what stuff was just like normal furniture or floors and stuff. But otherwise I was having a grand old time beating the shit out of people. Like, I mean, it's on Xbox Game Pass, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say, for the people who are on the fence about it, it is available as a part of Xbox Game Pass. It is also a Play Anywhere title, so you could play it on Xbox One, Series X and S, Windows 10, and your save file carries over everywhere. It's on cloud gaming, too.
At the very least, I would say check it out.
$20. Pernell, what's your verdict?
Oh, easily a buy. This is one of the least conflicted buys I've had in a while.
Jacob?
I would say buy it as well, although I haven't been able to get through it nearly as much as I know Pernell has.
I'm going to join y'all on the buy it train. I think this is going to be a sleeper hit. I think if people actually pay attention and give it a shot, they're going to find a lot to love. But I worry that the name and the art might just turn people off and they won't realize it's a really good game.
And think about it also, like, I like that the storytelling is done sometimes. I think I mentioned earlier, but just in case, the comic book panels.
Yeah.
But, oh, also I didn't mention there's a spider-like mechanic for those who are like, what about, you know, other traversal abilities? You can kind of grab objects and pull like a Spider-Man type maneuver and swing from location to location too. But it does require you to be interacting with a very specific type of object, but still, it exists and it's freaking great.
Yeah, later in the game, I'm sure there's some brutal platforming sections, but from what I've played in the beginning so far, there was nothing too hard to handle.
Oh, there's some stuff. Don't
later in the game, it gets rough.
Don't,
Yeah, don't, not even later. Hell, towards the back half of the first area, it got to be annoying. But it's manageable because the penalty for death is a loss of money. But you can always try again, which I genuinely appreciate. But with that said, yeah, there will be times you're like, oh, god damn it, come on, I was going to buy some upgrades for my guy, and now I'm broke. Or I was going to feed these beggars some money, or give these beggars money so they can eat. But now I can't. Darn.
But like, it's a son of a bitch.
Do it. Are you hungry? Ain't you? But yeah, it's a fantastic game. I genuinely do like this game. It's got a certain level. Oh, another thing I didn't even mention. The main characters are even freaking great. Like, he's a completely likable dude. It has that Dropsy vibe to me where it's like everything about, like, I like it. It makes me feel happy because, like, the world itself is pretty depressing because, I mean, it's the period of history that it takes place in. But the character you control and his interactions with the environment are great. Like, he's a completely, like, extremely likable guy. And I'm okay with that. No brooding anti-hero bullshit here. Thank you very much.
Cool. All right. Well, moving on. Next game is Silver Nornir, developed by Worldwide Software, published by Kemco, released November 5th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and PC for $14.99. The world has been destroyed twice by the origin of chaos. The only survivors of the catastrophe will stand again to try to stop the world's end. Will the world follow its destiny to be destroyed? Chris, this sounds like a happy Kemco game.
Yeah. It stars a broody anti-hero, and no, actually the hero, well, the, you know, the male protagonist of it. Yeah. They got real close to almost not having a male protagonist in this game. I was so excited, but then no.
Well, yeah, this is Worldwide Software. We normally see X Create and Hit Point. It's
Kemco. I'm just saying, Kemco doesn't publish anything, doesn't have a male protagonist except for Meridian Tavern Story. And I feel like they got away with that on like a technicality or something. But anyways, but yeah, it is true. This is a Kemco RPG made for the consoles that is not made by X-Create, not even made by Hit Point. And, you know, it's made by Worldwide, who we see sometimes. I have reviewed one of their games before, and I've already forgotten the title, so whatever. It was I'm gonna remember in a second here when I look it up. Symphony of Eternity. I think I talked about that one about like 5 years ago because it was on 3DS.
Nice.
Anyways, so yeah, it doesn't have. It does it. It looks like a Kemco game, like, aesthetically. It is a 32-bit-ish, like, you know, 2D RPG, sprites galore, really great soundtrack. Like, it's got all the, like, the look of an X-Create game, but it's different. Apparently, it was developed for mobile platforms long ago, which these Kemco games usually are, but I could not find like solid facts about this game because I think it kind of mostly existed in Japan up until, you know, just now. So, yeah, Legend of Ixtona is another one, and that one's also unusual because it's a strategy RPG, not a JRPG. That, you know, it's a grid move type thing. But anyways, so yeah, this one, it looks like a Kemco RPG, but it, or like the X-Create style Kemco RPGs, but that is actually not what it is. And so, you'll find yourself kind of being like, oh, where's so-and-so, where's such-and-such, and it's not quite there. It is interesting, though. One thing I will say about the game, just as an overarching statement of quality, is that the game motors. It is fast. This is like, I don't know, like the Excite Truck of like JRPGs, almost. Like, it opens the story up, and it's like, okay, so here is the, you know, here's the bad guy. He's Azathoth, the origin of chaos. Here's the goddess and the keeper of time, the true peacekeeper. And the peacekeeper, you know, is supposed to defeat Azathoth. But then But then, like, you know, he gets, you basically start the game in the final battle, right? And it is over in less than a second. Like, you get into the final battle, the final boss gets first move, wipes your party, and you barely even get to look at him. And then it's like, all of your party is now dead. You have to be preserved for all time or something, for whatever reason, by the goddess. So she's like, well, we're going to keep you here for eternity. The world is now completely effed, and so you are going to wait here for an entire new, like, for like to go from primordial Earth to, like, civilization, and then, you know, the time when it is threatened again by the same guy, and then you can try again. And that part's kind of slow, but fortunately it doesn't all happen on camera.
It actually is a fairly quick game if you want it to be as well. You can set the text speed to instant, and if you want, you can hold the A button and basically skip all the text if you want, or by accident if you didn't mean to.
By accident a lot for me, yeah.
Yeah.
And anyway, so, you know, that whole story gets set up, like the world ends, and then it's explained in text that the world has ended twice already. And so now we flash forward to the third age, quote unquote, and now we get to meet our heroes. We recruit all six of them within the first hour of the game. It shifts between, like, different scenarios where you have a different lead in your party as they kind of come together in pairs. And you move around the world map like it is just, like, it's on fire. It is so fast. Like, the only thing I can really think of to compare it to is in the modern, like, the Pixel Remaster and Game Boy Advance versions of Final Fantasy VI. Like, you buy an item that's called Sprint Shoes that in the original SNES version made you walk twice as fast, and therefore you could move around pretty fast. No. But then the future releases have a built-in dash function, but you can still buy the shoes and then move four times as fast. That's what this game moves like all the time.
Oh, Lord.
When you get into a fight, which, by the way, you have auto battle, so those can be over real quick, the camera pans between the left side, and I mean it pans, it just keeps moving to the left side where the enemies are and the right side where your characters are. It follows special moves and your character's movements. The camera is just constantly going back and forth. Like, this is the only JRPG that I ever felt a little bit motion sick about. Again, it does it fast. Just everything about this game is, like, so zippy. And I was just like, wow. So I just had to explain that, like, right away. The combat in it is pretty good. Like I said, it has auto fight. So, you know, if you want to just push the equivalent to the X button, I guess it's the Y button on the PlayStation controller that I use that my computer thinks is an Xbox controller. So I'm pressing triangle, which I know because it's like the X button, but it's actually the Y button.
Yeah, for Xbox. So,
anyways, you can do that, or you can go for a higher grade because your battles are all graded in, you know, the usual. I don't know that there's an F. Like, if you just put it on auto battle, you usually get a B.
Yeah.
I guess if you get hit a lot or something, then you get, like, lower grades. But, yeah, if you can use special moves, you can use what? Who's whispering?
And I think Jacob's making noise.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
That's okay.
He's wheezing.
Oh, okay. It's because my review is moving so fast. It's just no. So yeah, you can, like, use special moves, and you can also double them up and have different pairs of characters learn kind of dual techs, a little bit Chrono Trigger style, for devastating damage. And, you know, they each have, like, the kind of timer bar that goes up. The points are called TP. I guess time points or something like that. So when they go up to, like, over 100, then, you know, you get to, like, you know, really bust out the special moves. You could take down, like, bosses in the game in, like, two moves with these things. And jeez, this game does not have the X create thing of, like, letting you purchase, like, super weapons at the very beginning of the game. Like, this is just how the game is. I don't even know if there's adjustable difficulty, because again, it's more limited in its, like, range of different ways you can mess with it. You know, there's none of the weapons eating weapons. the lottery system's not there, but there is a special point system that allows you to purchase upgrades to your party, but they're like, they're pretty incremental. Like, it's stuff that you should probably purchase. And of course, then there's also, you know, straight up purchasable bonuses with actual money, but that's usual for a Kemco game. But yeah, it's like, it's a really interesting game. It tells a cool story. It's got an interesting cast of characters that are, you know, just within like three sentences, it's like you learn like all this crazy stuff. Like, this girl is over 300 years old and maybe the incarnation of the goddess. She has been living for like a over 300 years or something, or since the beginning of the world or whatever. And then here's her sister. She got turned into a cyborg 300 years ago, and now she like is known as the goddess of death or something like that. But actually, she's quite kind-hearted, and you know, it's just like it'll explain this stuff as quickly as I am explaining it now. There's a butler with an eye patch. He's not even explained at all. So yeah, there's like a total of like I want to say like six playable characters that can be in your party at the same time. Then there's like a mix of like supporting characters too. You know, there's bad guys that are a team of bad guys that are introduced, you know, really early on, your Team Rocket, as it were. One of them, of course, is a little girl who should not be on a battlefield, but she's the most powerful one. You know, those old things. But yeah, it tells a cool story. It does it in a very much more straightforward way and at about 1,000 miles an hour. So that is Silver Nornir, nice. Or whatever.
For the people who are curious, it's about 15, 16 hours, it seems to be, for the main story. So it's not a huge time investment.
I heard, yeah, Legend of Ixtona is similarly short, so I guess this is just their thing.
Yeah, like you mentioned, they sell the experience upgrades and damage upgrades if you want to spend the extra money and get stuff like that. And then Achievement Hunters. The achievement list in this game is there's 30 achievements, and they are to beat the story. That's it.
Nice.
You just get them for story beats. So there you go. Cool. Next game is Counterattack, developed.
I didn't even say whether to buy it or not.
I thought you did. You're like, that's Silver Nornir.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. It's a buy it.
All right, well,
I just didn't use those words. I didn't know I was done.
$14.99. Chris, what is your verdict on Silver Nornir?
Why, I think it's a buy it.
Darn it.
Okay, can we move on now?
Yeah.
Yay! Next game is Counterattack, developed and published by Relative Games, released November 4th on Xbox One and Series X and S for $14.99. Chris, you're going to love this intro. Counterattack is a side-scrolling space shooter shmup.
Yes.
In parentheses. Yes. Team up or fight solo, 1 to 4 players local or up to 4 players online co-op, allegedly. Unlock upgrades, use powerful ultimate abilities, and enhance your ship the way you want and save Earth from annihilation. Pernell and Jacob, both of you played this one. I played it as well. And this is one of those things that is amazing in theory, and the execution is just a little rough.
To agree with you on that. And it's funny, too, because I want to say in the single player element, which we ended up doing, I think we each individually ended up kind of doing it after what we will talk about shortly happening to us. We ended up all kind of playing single player, and I did find that to be kind of fun. I wasn't too engaged in the narrative they wrote, but I mean, that's kind of the nature of the beast sometimes.
Yeah.
But the gameplay is solid. For those who are familiar with the classic Gradius series or Nemesis series, this is right up your alley because they used a similar mechanic where you shoot hordes of enemies as they're flying towards you, and every once in a while they will drop a power-up item, which will allow you to progress down a track of available upgrades. One item will move you one over. They range in elements like beam power-ups, speed power-ups, spread power-ups, missile power-ups. You know this shtick. Eventually, even one up if you have the life in you to get all the way to the end, which more than a few times I was like one power-up away from getting the one up, and the game's like, nope, you're dead. I'm like, screw you. But each time you decide to use one of the power-ups, the progression meter resets at 0, and you have to start over again on that, but you do get to maintain the upgrades you spent the points on. So, what ends up happening is, you're playing this game, shooting things, getting your items powered up and all that, And you progress between different levels as well. But for whatever reason, whenever reason, you'll occasionally just get an unlock. And the unlocks are equipable abilities you can put onto your ship. And they run the gamut. You get things like, I don't know, like more speed, or you might start with a speed power-up instead of having to spend the points on it. Same for the other weapons or areas on the node. You might get something that actually completely changes what the weapon would be. Like one of my favorites that I got early on was an item that made it so that if I equipped it when I unlocked the beam power-up, rather than be a beam weapon as intended, it becomes like a piercing laser that just fires out and stays out. Kind of like the classic Gradius laser weapon. And I never took it off. Despite the fact that I had a limited capacity, that was one that made the cut. And it's kind of cool in the sense that they allow you to customize your ship with a lot of different unlocks. Some might seem kind of weak sauce in the grand scheme of things, but other times, like, no, this is legit. Make it happen. Though I only wish I could read what the hell half the shit was that I was getting, because yeah, the text was making
really
me
small
squint.
Text in this game.
And I think Carnage made a point about it while we were playing it, which was that, guys, you had a lot of screen real estate you just kind of let linger there, which could have just been you stretching the screen out and increasing the size of the text. But real sweet if you did. But it doesn't kill the game so much as it makes me go, crap, I can't see what I'm getting. But oh well, when I'm in the menu and I can relax, maybe I'll just give it a little more of an intense read and see what I come up with. But
yeah, you're mentioning the attachments. There's over 500 of them to collect.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of fucking attachments. That is an impressive number of attachments.
Kind of reminds me of like a Dynasty Warriors or Blade Storm. You remember that back on Xbox 360? Like, you had to collect all those books on the battlefield, and like one of them wouldn't even unlock until after 100 hours of gameplay.
Jesus.
And even really that wasn't even like a guaranteed.
Yeah, no thanks. I mean, I guess if it happened randomly, that'd be cool, but there are also definitely people out there, I'm sure of, that were farming for that. So it's like, oh, come on, I played 100 hours, where's my thing? But I am not that good. I'm going to go be happy to get it, luckily.
Some other bullet points I'll hit quick. Has a choose-your-own-path story mode with 32 levels. As you get better through the game, you can start on higher difficulties and go through some of the harder paths. Three endless survival modes. So three different ways to see how long you could last. Jacob, I know you're probably a minute man. And then we got two uniques on the store page. Eight playable characters, each with a unique ship, and each ship has a powerful, unique special ability.
And I think it's funny because it may just be me, but it's because I'm old. I'm not sure of it. But when I was reading the descriptions of the characters on the menu, I was like, I don't know what the hell they're telling me that thing does. What does that do? And I screw it. That character has cool shoes. I'm picking them. And then what ended up happening was I found a character that kind of gave me like a sort of favorite unlock, because her ultimate was she summoned drone ships, like four other sub ships that flew around you firing bombs and missiles at the same time. And they were really good for hitting like scenarios where like there were more enemies on the screen than my bullets could reach with me swerving everywhere. Like, nope, now I got four backup buddies just like blowing shit up. And the power for flying in at that point. So
yeah, I really enjoy the variety of the power ups. The one I enjoyed using, it would just be like a huge barrage of bullets and missiles and whatever weapons I had, it just like triple speed, a barrage. You mentioned the one where it would call in the four planes. Jacob, what was the one you were using?
I had missiles going everywhere, and like they would essentially just like they would target like an enemy and they were firing off pretty damn quick. But I also had these like, I don't even know how to describe it, because it was like a force field that like could push up and down or whatever. Like it would just fire like, I don't know how the hell to describe
just the side weapons. Yeah,
but it was essentially like firing up and down at the same time, and so like along with my normal laser, and so I was just like annihilating everything in my path.
Yeah, it's I think the game is a really fun game. Problem is, the online play did not work that well for us. We tried playing a four-player game on Sunday. between dashboards, game crashes. We had lockups. We're told the developer is aware of these issues. He's working on them. He's trying to put out a patch quick. One of the solutions when there's a screen freeze is to apparently turn your controller off and back on. So if you're playing the game and you run into a freeze after a level, you could try that. It seems hit or miss on when levels are over, if you're going to be able to progress or not. And online, we could get through a stage and then like two of us would be locked up and we couldn't do anything.
Very annoying.
Yeah, it was. And we even like would split up so instead of like all four of us, like it was two and two, and it would still lock up after one stage.
Yeah. I will say when the four of us were playing together and all the power-ups were flying and all the bullets were flying, it was fucking awesome.
It was very beautiful chaos.
It was so cool to play a shmup online with three other people, just party, shmup it up. It was a blast. I just hope they can fix the technical issues for $15. I hate saying this is like a try it because it's such a good game, but I think the technical problems hold it up enough that it's like a tread with caution.
In my case, like my experience with the single player wasn't really any issues related to that, so I could still go with a buy it, but it is more so related to the idea, like, by knowing that online ain't happening just yet. But as a single player experience, it still totally works for me.
I'm in agreement with Purnell on that. I would still give it a buy it, but realize online may not work.
All right. Well, Jacob, that is it for you.
Thank God.
Good.
Hey, here I was about to say it was a pleasure. And now you're like, thank God, get away from these clods.
Oh, no, I need to go off and feed my dog, but also, like, you know, doom scroll through all the shit with the midterm elections, so...
Oh, God, don't do that to yourself. Don't. Here's a tip. The end is going to happen regardless. Following it as it happens isn't going to change shit but your blood pressure. Just wait till tomorrow.
I can't.
Yeah, it's like I gotta watch. You go back on the dude's like, okay, midterm gate. And the guy's like got the fire burning behind him at the desk, like, everything's going crazy. It's up 0.5 points. They're saying that the guy at the booth, he checked me. He wouldn't let me in. He was wearing a shirt. Now they go crazy with that shit. I can't do it anymore. The results will come in. I'll read the results. And what it is, but I'm not giving those fuckers ratings to fearmonger me.
Well, anywho, have a good night, folks.
Catch you later, buddy.
Moving on, next game is the Alterity Experience, developed by Onitron Studios, or Onitron Studio, published by Dolores Entertainment, released October 28th on the Switch and PS4 for $9.99. You are Anton Carnwell, California farmer. Recently, your ranch house is prey to strange and unexplained phenomena, invaded from all sides. You need to be reactive, using your mind to prevent any intrusions. Will you survive the eventful night ahead? Chris, what is going on in the Alterity Experience?
Okay, so this is a, let's call it a, I don't even want to call it horror. Let's call it like terror light. This is a first person. So it all takes place inside of your house. You are Anton. You are a dad. You're kind of cheesy. You're... family has gone to the movies for the night, but then what you think is them coming back, because you see like this pair of highlights drive up, suddenly goes up and, you know, above the roof, and you find out, oh, this is weird, and now purple lights are happening, and I'm, you know, we're getting invaded, and there's aliens trying to break into my house. Which of course all started with like them, I guess, spraying purple stuff on corn, which I'm not sure that really comes back, but anyway, the key is that basically I say key, that's gonna really come in handy. You know, as soon as you kind of go through a brief tutorial where you pick up your smartphone and that kind of becomes your on-screen like map, because it's apparently an app that like controls the the like garage door style like shutters that you can control that are all around your house, which why you're a corn farmer, but lucky you had those things installed because again there's aliens trying to break in. So the game kind of takes place in a few phases. Like I said, you're in first person, you're kind of walking around your house doing different things. There's, you know, and like, so there will be a phase where it'll be the aliens are trying to get in. So you have, and then they shut off the power. So your app no longer works to do those shutters. So you have to do it manually. So it's kind of a, you have to chase, like you can still see on your app, like what windows are opening. So you have to like run over to those windows and physically shut them, you know, as the lights are coming through. And the one thing that this game does really well is the atmosphere, you know, it's, the graphics are somewhat simplistic and the house is just bonkers. It makes no sense. Like everything is in drawers and stuff, like shoes and whatnot. And it, again, is a mansion, even though it just kind of looks like, you know, a usual farmhouse. But yeah, it's crazy. Anyways, yeah, you're going around this house and, you know, shutting the windows and stuff. And then you're like, you know, the power's off. So he's like, I got to turn on the power. And so you have to find your key. Your key is, there's a bunch of keys that you have to find that are just lost in this house. And that has nothing to do with aliens. That's just this guy not investing in a good keychain. So you have to go to like your living room or whatever. And like, you know, I found out that in multiple playthroughs, it's actually randomized like where it is. So you have to just basically turn your living room, you know, all the cushions over and all this stuff till you find the key. Then you go down to the basement, and then you do a little mini game to get the power back on. Once you do that, then, you know, something else will happen where you either have to find a key or maybe the aliens are coming back and you have to, like, shut the windows and stuff like that. Eventually, you're going to find yourself going along all the different rooms of the house until you find a thing that is going to save the day. And then you have to, like, actually... let the alien in and kind of it becomes a little bit of a stealth thing so you can find out how to operate the thing that's going to save you. I'm being vague on purpose because I don't want to give away too much of the puzzles.
Yeah.
So it was something at first I was like real like, ooh, this is creepy and scary. The lighting's really good and, you know, the whole threat of an alien, like when you're just all alone and, you know, it triggers like this feeling, the anxiety of like being alone in a house and like fearing a break-in, but also like aliens. But I will say the game, again, it's not horror because there's no gore, there's no violence. In fact, if you are caught by the alien, and I won't say what the alien looks like, but it's not very scary. If you're caught by it, then you quote unquote die. That is to say, the screen just goes dark and you get to start from a checkpoint. So it, you know, it's not like it's a terror experience because you're kind of fighting against something that is terrorizing you, but it's not a horror experience. Like you're, you know, there's no weapons, there's no way to fight back against the invaders. It's just kind of solving puzzles by walking around your house and stuff until you win. If you manage to not die, the entire, like, everything you could possibly do in this game put together is about 30 minutes. So it's a short game. But, you know, again, you're going to be puzzling over puzzles. You might die a couple of times, something like that. It really just kind of... You know, I would scale the difficulty as being pretty low. Like, some folks have even described this as a walking simulator, which I'm like, it's not that bad. It is simple, though. Like, nothing's going to, like, really stop you from, you know, if you're fairly okay at, like, simple puzzles. Yeah, you'll find your way. And there's, like, things to read that kind of give you a little bit more world building. You can read documents, magazines, you know, stuff about your character. And your dude, even when he's, like, the power has shut off and he's got to get to the basement and, you know, find the key and turn the lights back on so that he can keep this alien from coming into his house and killing him. If you could still, like, stop by, like, pictures of your daughter or son and be like, and he'll be like, reminiscing about them and stuff. So it's
urgency.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it has as much urgency as you want to put into it.
Well, it's yeah, $10. What are your thoughts?
It's a cool little tale. It's a nice little experience. I personally probably wouldn't pay $10 for this, but if you are into, like I said, a nice light kind of puzzle game that builds up the anxiety pretty good, but isn't going to straight up, it's not going to jump scare you. It's not going to like horrify you or anything like that, but it's just a nice little, a flavor of horror game that, you know, if you are curious about that, I'd say it's worth a purchase. It looks great and it sounds great. You know, voice acting's pretty good. You know, it's for a $10 game, it's got a lot going for it. So I'm gonna put it at try it just because, again, the shortness of the game is like hard to sell. But if it was a longer experience, that would be weird too. So no, I don't know.
Well, it is also on sale from what I could see for $6.99. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, yeah, that's again, it's good. I think if you're looking for an experience like this, then this game will satisfy. If you're looking for something that's a lot more, you know, again, intense,
yeah,
maybe don't bother. But, you know, like I said, it's one of those things where it's hard to judge it because it kind of is unique in a sense that, you know, it's horror terror light. Yeah. It plays on anxiety more than it does actual fight or flight or anything like that. So, you know, no big scares here.
All right, well, next game, Nitro Kid, developed by Wild Boy Studios, published by Tiny Build, released October 18th on Steam for $19.99. Synthwave roguelike deck builder set in the neon 80s. Pick your agent, build your deck, hit card combos, and fight through the floors of the Infinity Tower, featuring 30 fresh synthwave tracks from Ludowick, Tonebox, and Jules Reeves. Purnell, what is going on in Nitro Kid?
Lead off by immediately saying, even though the game itself is fine, the reason why you want to buy this game is because of that soundtrack. So just needs to be said. Hell, that's why I wanted to get the game, was because of that soundtrack. I was like, can we get a review code for this, please? I want to play it. Soundtrack
is available on Steam for $6.99. So if you buy the kid or buy the Nitro Kid game for $20, you could drop a few extra bucks for the soundtrack.
It's worth it, people. It's worth it, people.
So tell us, what is the game?
All right, so the idea behind Nitro Kid is that you are playing as one of three individuals who are breaking into a shadowy corporation to rescue a bunch of, I don't even know how to describe it, like genetically modified children. Like they're doing like experimentation on them and they have them locked up inside of this tower. And you're trying to rescue them. But of course, the gameplay is done by way of a roguelike, a card-based roguelike. Now, card-based roguelikes are quite the common thing in this day and age, so in that aspect, there's nothing here you haven't seen before. But one thing that they did bring to the table that doesn't happen very often in these kinds of games, they actually have you manipulating your space on a board, too. Because usually with a part where a deck builder is involving, you know, shielding yourself, attacking enemies, doing the most damage as possible, and getting out. In this game, some of your cards will actually determine where you are spaced out on the board, and other times, you have to worry about evading. You can actually evade enemies because they are only attacking in a very specific location that you might be able to escape from. But, right from the cuff, they do not make this game easy, which is a good thing, I think, because it makes you work for the sweet, 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 sweet win. so, what it is that when you go into a level, you will see the enemies you're going to have to face on that particular stage. At that point, you then have to place your character down on the map itself. And then once you've chosen your location, the game begins, or that round begins. You have a set of cards in your hand and a full-size deck of cards that are typically based around the type of character you choose to play as. So Lee, the default character that you get from the beginning, he's a martial artist. So a lot of his moves involve punch attacks and flying kicks and stuff like that. And when you use an attack, you use some of your energy to perform it. When you use anything, for that matter, you'll use energy to perform it. And once you run out of energy, your turn ends and it's your enemy's turn. And the way enemies work in this game is when you see them on the map, they show you what type of attack they're going to do, and they show you the direction it's going to be fired into, and they tell you how much damage it's going to do. If you happen to not be in the range of the enemy when your turn ends, then they'll do their attack, and you'll be scot-free from receiving damage. in other times. And after that, they might move again and then set themselves up for the next attack. But there's a few interesting caveats to this that makes it a little tougher than just being like, don't be where the enemy is. The first, of course, is the obvious area of effect attacks, in which case an enemy might take up like a good 3x3 grid. And if you're anywhere within that 3x3 grid, look the hell out. Or in one case of one guy fought, he attacked every space on the board but like two every turn. And it was like, if you can't get to that spot that's empty, you're going to get hit for like 8 damage. It sucks. But then aside from that, there's also enemy abilities. So, and I'm not just talking about things like, you know, buff up all the other characters on the screen if the round ends and they're still alive, which is an ability in this game. And if you see a safety officer, kill him fast because he's going to fuck your day up. but there's also abilities they have that modify their how they behave towards your behaviors. For example, one of my least favorite ones is chase. What chase is the enemy will move towards you every time you move. So it makes it harder for you to keep a distance from that specific type of enemy because you'll try to be like, okay, I got to get away from him before he does his attack. Where do I go? I'll move there. You move there. He follows after. He's like, crap, I'm not out of the way because he just, you know, moved right behind me. What do I do? So then you're hoping you have attacks that push the enemy away from you, which gives you the time you need to get away and make that escape or whatever. And there's also an ability where, like, for example, if you move next to a guy, you know, like a typical Final Fantasy Tactics back attack. But in this case, if you move next to the guy, the enemy is like, there's someone next to me. I'm going to turn to face them right now, which means you can't sneak attack them because they will always be vigilant and aim for you when they know when you're nearby. So it makes it a fair bit tougher to plan your moves, knowing that enemies have all these ways to you know, modify their behavior. And it makes it so it's not as exploitable as you would hope it to be. At the end of each battle, you will get a certain amount of money dependent on how many rounds it took you to finish the fight. And then you'll move on to the next node. And nodes can have any number of different things. A special event where if you choose a certain decision out of a multi-answer question, you'll get a buff like a hit point bonus or money bonus, or you might take damage, any number of outcomes, but just an event space. With a shop where you can spend your hard-earned money on buying cards that are ranged anywhere between the common to epic to legendary status. Also like the effect by how much money they cost. and you also can sometimes find a Nitro Kid. A Nitro Kid is one of the aforementioned children. They'll be swimming in a tank or a vat or, you know, container, whatever word you choose to go by. And you, when you rescue them, the game gives you the option. You can either recharge a mod you've already used. And I guess now I think I'll explain mods in a second. Or you can take on a brand new mod and slap it on instead. And mods themselves are just special abilities that you can have on a character throughout their run. For example, you might have one that allows you to move into a space without taking up a turn or using energy to do it, which does come in handy sometimes when you need to really get far and you only have enough energy for one movement from your deck, or you didn't draw any movement cards or whatever. But things like that, you'll be able to say, okay, I want a new ability. I want an ability that whenever I punch a guy, they get set on fire, which is fantastic. But you can make that kind of shift. As you play through a level, or a particular stage, I should say, because a level is an individual node, but each stage is broken up by multiple nodes, and in order to progress to fight the boss, you have to rescue at least, you basically have to rescue all the Nitro Kids in the area. And once you've pulled off the rescue of the Nitro Kids, regardless of where they are on the map, when you get to the end of your row of levels that you're playing through, you can choose to go take on the boss. And bosses are douchebags in this game. They hit like a truck. Hell, even the slightly stronger than average enemies in the game hit like a truck. So you're going to die. You're going to die a lot. You're going to have fun dying. But man, that synth wave music makes each death that much sweeter. Because I can come back and listen to it again and again. Because it is a really, really good OST. I cannot sing the praises enough. Fantastic music.
I just wanted to interrupt here and say that I found the Bandcamp link for the composer's OST release, so you can buy this on Bandcamp without having to buy the game.
How much is it on Bandcamp?
Huh?
Would you say it was on Bandcamp?
It's $5 on Bandcamp.
Nice.
Or more, if you feel like being more generous.
So on Bandcamp Friday, get that soundtrack, people.
Nice. I know I saw on Apple... if you purchase music that way, like I do, you can get the G Jules Reeves soundtrack, which is 25 tracks for $5.99. And there's also the Tonebox Nitro Kid soundtrack EP, which is 4 songs for $4.
Damn. They did a good job pushing the music on this game. They knew what they had. They knew they had that lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, I think I know what I'm buying on Friday.
Mm-hmm. But I can say, even now that we know that the music is available in other ways, that doesn't mean that the game itself is just not worth playing. The game is fun. The soundtrack makes a good overlay of sound while you're playing it. But the game itself is also pretty fun, too. You're going to die a lot, though. So if you're not the type of person that is okay with losing to win, maybe not for you. Though, you do unlock more abilities for your characters with each death, because they acquire experience on each attempted run. So that's pretty cool.
Well, it is $20. What are your thoughts on Nitro Kid?
I'm going to give it another buy. This has been a good day of reviews for me. Buy this game.
Hey, good games are good for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even buddy. That one guy who plays terrible games.
His name's Jacob. He has a name.
Poor Jacob.
Next game, final game to talk about tonight is My Big Sister Remastered, developed by Stranga Games, published by Grab the Games. Released October 25th on Steam for $7.99. My name is Luzia, and this story is about my big sister, Sombria. Are you ready to hear it? Chris, what's going on?
Okay, so this is a remastered re-release of My Big Sister, which I had reviewed before. So, I reviewed it on Steam, and I liked it so much I bought it on Switch, in fact. Nice. Yeah, these are... basically, it's a one-person dev team that has been making these stories, which is now actually 2 chapters. There's Ashina the Red Witch and My Big Sister, and they are linked because Ashina the Red Witch is the stated antagonist of My Big Sister. So it's kind of up to you as to which one you want to play first, because Ashina the Red Witch, I believe, is kind of a prequel. But basically what it is it's the, I'll describe the game in a moment, but it's basically the same game, same story, with a few little things altered to kind of make the games sort of meld together a little bit better, as well as a total graphics overhaul. Now, My Big Sister was originally kind of an 8-bit, it's an 8-bit, you could say a walk and click. Because, you don't point at anything, you walk into it and talk to it, for a key or something, solve puzzles that way. And really, the puzzles are pretty light, so I would even just say it's kind of a walking simulator almost. but it does have things that you can actually do. It's not just walking, so that's unfair to say. But it's presented in this kind of 8-bit style that's a little fancier, like maybe, Final Fantasy 1 sprites on a Final Fantasy 4 like background or something. It kind of, the soundtrack would sort of go between bleeps and bloops and like actual like orchestrated music. The remaster kind of goes more into the soundtrack being like orchestral and or at the very least real instruments. There's not a whole lot of 8-bitness to it, except for the character sprites, which are largely unchanged. The backgrounds, however, have been hugely upgraded to have, like, lighting effects, a much fancier look to them. Overall, it's brighter. That was one thing about the scenes in the original version of the game. A lot of them were very dark, so it's like you'd kind of stumble around it, like, just to try to find a door. And from what I could tell from the amount of time I played on this, they've more or less fixed that, so that's pretty nice. It's more about telling the story, and it is a very cool story. It's about a little girl, and her big sister who, both of them are kind of, they've got their own little issues, their own little kind of tensions with each other and stuff like that. But then, due to mysterious circumstances, her sister is maybe killed and turns into a big ghost with elongated limbs and a penchant for eating people. And so that kind of like creeps up in the little girl's life, as well as in this sort of this other world that she ends up in, where there's otherworldly creatures, where she basically is kind of trying to figure out how to cure her sister of this curse, Which again was kind of put upon her by Ashina the Red Witch, who, you know, suffered similarly. And again, this is stuff that's covered in the events of the other game. So this is kind of, like I said, a follow-up to Ashina, or Ashina is rather more of a prequel, I suppose. Again, I haven't beaten either game, so I can't tell you like for sure. The games do kind of move around a lot in time and in places, so... You know, like, the whole first part of the game is basically told in flashback, so it's... But, like I said, it's really well written. You know, it's got believable dialogue, a little bit of humor. They've definitely added, like, more flavor text and more interactions to the new remastered version. So, yeah, it's really cool to check out. It's got violence. It's got some 8-bit nudity in it. You know, but it's...
Interesting.
Yeah. It's like, but you know, it's a pretty, it's more of a romp than it is like straight up horror in my eyes. It's more about telling a story, and it does that really well. And I really like what attracted me to this game in the first place was the fact that it's telling it all in a very like a classic 8-bit kind of JRPG way, but without the battle system or the dungeons or anything like that. So. It's it's pretty cool, and I really do like this remaster. It pretty much does everything a little bit better.
Well, it's $8, your official verdict?
Yeah, I'm going to say it's a buy it, and that is including if you've already bought it, especially if you are interested in Ashina the Red Witch, because like I said, the remaster is meant to look more like and flow better with the other game. So if you haven't picked up either of them, I recommend picking up both of them, the remastered Big Sister and Ashina the Red Witch, and check them out. It's a really cool experience to play them.
Cool, sounds good.
Yeah,
all right, we made it through another one. We are done with this episode. Big thanks to literally everyone for coming on this episode. It was the whole crew. Chris and Purnell, thank you for being here. Tim, Brooke, Aki, Jacob, thanks for dropping by, doing your thing.
Music, thanks for being thirsty.
Music, we're going to keep with the one-ups. Purnell, what one-up song do you want to hear?
Give me a surprise me.
Surprise you? Well, a game or like a genre? Like, I could ask for a genre because they do everything.
A genre. Okay, do like freaking they do like a folk? Do you have any a folky album?
Folk music. Probably the closest might be like the Earthworm Jim Andy Asteroids.
There you go. Make it happen.
All right. Well, here we go. Enjoy it.